Hello and welcome to Geraumt, your podcast for the topics of design and information design. My name is Christian Lunger. I'm a service designer and information designer. And today we're talking, well, as you can hear, in English again. And we're talking about an event that is taking place in London on the 18th of September this year. And it's called Wayfinding Future Thinking, which is quite interesting. And Markus and I, we will attend this event and we're looking forward to this event. It's co-sponsored, co-organized by the Sign Design Society and by SEGD. And luckily for us, we have somebody to talk to today who is quite familiar with the topic of wayfinding and with the Sign Design Society. It's Andrew Barker. Himself, he is an information designer. He, if you look at his website, he likes a lot book design. He's a wayfinding designer and he's a behavioral researcher as well. And what's very important for our talk today, he's the chair for the Sign Design Society. So he's quite familiar with whom he has chosen for this event to talk and what it's all about. Andrew, thank you very much for your time and I'm looking forward to talking to you. So how came it along that you have organized this kind of event in London called Wayfinding Future Thinking?
It came about because we organized a symposium last year in collaboration with the SEGD on the subject of inclusive design. And that was really successful. We were really happy with how that went. The collaboration with the SEGD worked really well. And we wanted to repeat that. And we obviously didn't want to take the same topic of inclusive design again. Sustainable design and kind of future thinking practices are one of the other topics that our membership indicated that they were interested in and that they would like to learn more about. And so when I was thinking about, you know, what topic shall we do this year, having done inclusive design last year, it seemed natural that it should be around sustainable design, but we wanted to widen it so that it was thinking also about slight just to give a bit more kind of breadth to the topic and make it more broadly about future thinking. And it I also realized that we could partner with the London Design Festival and become a partner event for their festival. And that might help us to actually get more, a broader range of people coming to the event, people who might have otherwise not heard about it. And it's also just after the, can I remember the name of the event? There's the World Design Forum or something it's called, which is happening at the Barbican Centre.
Earlier. Right about the same time or just before?
It's earlier in September. It's happening. Okay. And they're focusing also on sustainable design and future thinking. That's obviously the whole of design they're covering rather than just wayfinding design. And it just seemed really a really good coincidence that that was happening just before the London Design Festival. And it aligned with what our planned subject matter was. So it all just seemed to fit together. And I was really interested to see the sorts of things that people wanted to talk about. So when we put out the call for proposals for people who wanted to speak at the symposium, we got a really interesting mix of proposals coming in. And in addition to that, we also went out and invited some people who we thought might have interesting things to say, who might not have otherwise known that our symposium was happening, we invited some of those people to also put in proposals, just to get the sort of mix of speakers that we wanted. The sorts of areas that I wanted to make sure that we were covering were the kind of future technologies and future materials, and also just future practices in terms of how design is going to be in the future, how the practice is going to change in the future. And I think we've succeeded in getting speakers that are going to cover all of those, and a really interesting mix of people. And I'm also really excited that some of our speakers are coming from elsewhere in Europe, which is, given that it's an in-person event and the people have to actually travel to be here, I'm really pleased that people are willing to travel that far to participate in the event.
Which is quite the topic I would have liked to talk about, because I knew of the Sign Design Society, and when I first encountered the organization, I had the belief that it's more of a British organization, but it's not the case. You have lots of international members as well, and preparing such kind of events to attract more international members and doing international corporations seems to me like this is like an intentional strategy to look across the borders and to attract more of the European community, at least, I'd say. Is that correct?
Yes, certainly. It used to be the case that the Sign Design Society, the events, the monthly events that we run were in person, and they almost entirely happened in London, not completely, but almost entirely. And that, of course, was quite limiting, because it meant that the audience and the speakers all had to be able to get to London at the right time on a Thursday evening. And when COVID came along and lockdowns happened, suddenly we couldn't do that anymore. And we had to make a very swift pivot to doing our talks online, in the same way as the rest of the world was suddenly having to change to working online.
Yes.
I mean, ironically, it was only about 3 weeks after I had taken over as chair that the lockdown began. So it was a fairly brutal introduction to managing the society. But I mean, you know, there was definitely a silver lining to it as far as the Sign Design Society was concerned. And what we found, because the talks were online, the speakers no longer had to be able to come to the UK to do their presentation. So suddenly we could get speakers from the US and from Australia and from Europe. So it gave us a much, much wider spectrum of speakers that we could access. And also it meant that we could get an audience from around the world. It means that sometimes people who are dialing in from China or Australia find that they're joining our talks at what for them is a very odd time of day. But it's because our kind of our key audience is still in the UK. So our talks still tend to work around what times are going to suit our UK audience is best, but we try to make them as global and inclusive as we possibly can. And I'm really pleased that the society has been able to do that, and that has been an outcome of having to switch to having the talks online. There is still an appetite in the society to have in-person events, because the social aspects and the networking aspects are really important, and it is difficult to do those when you're only ever talking to somebody on a screen. And we've tried a variety of formats for in-person events, and we struggled to find formats that got enough attendees. And what we found was that a symposium format, so it's like a fairly long half-day in-person event, that was kind of big enough for it to be worth people coming to London for. So
so the half-day really well. Was enough, or is it not too much or not too little either? So the half-day is, because I'm just one of the decision makers, and that we, Marcus and I, have decided to go there. even for the, let's, I really place it as even for the half day, because the topic is so interesting that we actually had bundled a couple of days before and after to make it like for us, like let's go to London after a long time again. So for us, the half day was okay. I wonder where's the break even regarding the length. Is half day just the one, just enough for the European community to go there? Or had it be a day to be more attractive? Have you some experience on that as well?
It's an interesting question. And it's one that it would probably be worth thinking about some more and talking to our audience to see what would suit them. Some of our thinking is that certainly for people who are in the closer parts of Europe, because it's the afternoon, you can fly in that morning. So you've not got to, if you don't want to, arrange to stay overnight. Whether that's a priority for our audience, it would be worth exploring. I mean, it's also a matter of what we have the capacity to organize. And because the Sign Design Society is quite small in terms of its management, we have to be cautious in what we can take on. And after the symposium last year, and after the enthusiasm that it generated, somebody suggested that maybe we should consider doing it twice a year. And I thought that was a lovely idea, but I thought it would also probably kill myself and Kate, the society administrator, because it is a lot of work that we have to do. And it's just a limit of what we can take on in addition to running the society anyhow. We would love to be able to do more. And it is the kind of symposium / conference format seems to be something that people like, because you get a lot of opportunities to learn stuff and to network and socialize, all packed into quite a compact bit of time.
I can tell you that by only reading what you have put on your website by now on the topics that you want to cover in 5 hours, I usually when I read a program, there is always something in between where I think, yeah, there I can relax or drink a coffee. But you've put so many interesting things in these 5 hours, all the topics you have already, all the program topics. I have to sleep long in the morning to be concentrated enough to follow each of the presentations.
Yes.
I leave it to you to give us some of the highlights of the program of this afternoon, which I'm really looking forward to.
Gosh, I think it would be kind of invidious of me to pick out any of the speakers in particular, because it's like, who's your favorite child? You're just not allowed to say, are you?
I have a daughter and a son. I can always say, you are my favorite daughter and you're my favorite son.
Yes. I don't think that's going to work with
5% or
something. To choose between the 6 presentations we're going to have. They're all really interesting topics. Yeah. I think, as I said, it was a really hard choice deciding which presentations we were going to include. And there were some that I would have loved to include that we couldn't. And sometimes it wasn't because they just weren't interesting enough. That was really not the case. It was simply trying to shape a program that was going to be interesting and cover a lot of different topics. So sometimes, you know, there were quite a lot of proposals that were to do with technology, and we didn't want to have an entire afternoon about technology, so we couldn't choose all of them. And I'm hoping that some of the presentations, some of the speakers who we weren't able to include in the symposium, are going to be able to talk at some of the Sign Design Society monthly events over the coming year. So, you know, all is not lost in terms of them not being able to present in the symposium. I'm I'm strenuously avoiding answering your question of telling you the highlights of the out of the six presentations. I honestly couldn't say who I think is going to be best. I mean, at the moment, I'm also just about to start wrestling with the thorny issue of how to put them into an order so that they form a nice shape. I've been avoiding doing it because it looks like quite a task, because they're all interesting, and how I'm going to fit them together. It will be interesting to see what sort of shape comes out of that.
In that case, I will take over the role to kind of inform the listeners to what's coming in detail. And what I found quite interesting about the titles so far and the topics you've chosen. So of course I'd start with the one that has to be on any program list at the moment, I believe. Of course we will hear about artificial intelligence. I think it's at least two that have it in the title. Again, one is the rise of personalized wayfinding in the age of agentic AI, which I find very interesting because it's really a topic that's apart from, you know, experimenting with AI, which we do as well as a company to get a grip on it and to see where the boundaries of using such technologies and what you can do and can't do with it. But I like the combination with the personalized wayfinding that I'm really looking forward to listening to. I'm really happy that you didn't only focus on technology, because when you made the shout out for, you know, proposals for your event, I like that there was a larger topic, you know, not just technology, but as well other topics like sustainability and so on, because there is more future in our profession than just the technology. And I think you have kind of looked at it that way as well, and had from my point of view, just reading the titles, I think you have found an interesting mix. Like, for example, you put one of placemaking and community building, which I find really interesting, especially the topic meaning, having the topic designing for meaning. Or with meaning, that is something as well that's going to interest me a lot. Mm-hmm. The immersive, yes, it's more like the multisensual. I hope that's the correct word in English. Yes. So it's not just, you know, that the stuff about technology, which sometimes is quite rational from my point of view, but it's the how about our other senses. Mm-hmm. So the mix. And as well, the topic that personally interests me a lot, the harnessing behavioral data and personal experiences to define the future of venue navigation. Mm-hmm. Very interesting topic. I'm looking forward to see what the approach will be, the actual content and the focus in this presentation. Mm-hmm. So from my point, I think it's a really good mix. It has all to do with future and what we can do to improve our community and the designs that we deliver for the people that are actually using them. So, I'm really looking forward to it, to see what the different presenters will focus on underneath the headlines. What would be a good question now? The basically is, because I wanted to talk about some of the couple of things that are actually included in the program, like your personal view on topics like AI and topics like placemaking. What is your approach as an information designer, as a wayfinding designer on those topics? Is there anything you can share?
One of the things that surprised me about the proposals that we got in general for the symposium was how preoccupied a lot of them were with technology, and I do hope that the future is not going to be all about technology, because we are still people with real physical bodies in a real environment. And
thanks for that statement.
it's easy to forget about that sometimes when you get too preoccupied with technology or what technology can do and the clever things that it can do. And so I found it interesting that my reaction to that was because I was like, oh, I really don't want to spend the entire afternoon listening to people talking about technology. It was interesting to me because what I thought we were going to get in the proposals was a huge number of proposals about sustainable materials and about, I don't know, green perspex and things like that. And I was surprised that there were fewer proposals on that than I might have expected. So that surprised me because I know that our audience are very keen to hear about sustainable materials. And it has proved quite hard to find speakers to do events about sustainable materials. And trying to find people to talk about sustainable materials for the symposium was quite challenging. So if there's anyone out there who wants to talk about sustainable materials, we're still interested to hear from you. It continues to be a subject of interest. And what I think is also interesting is how the practice is going to change in the future. What will change about that? And it would be really interesting, or it would have been interesting to get some really mad blue sky thinking about that, but couldn't find anyone who was quite as madly kind of future thinking as I was hoping for. Nobody who was going to be quite as provocative as I might have hoped. There was also somebody suggested a talk. They weren't suggesting they could do this talk, but they thought it would be a really interesting subject. And that is the history of wayfinding as depicted in science fiction films. So what did people think the future of wayfinding would look like in the past? There was a couple of examples from Star Trek that they came up with, and I went out looking for the person to do this talk, and I didn't succeed in finding them, but I thought it would have been a really interesting subject.
it's really, you're the first one I hear talking about that, because in my back brain, I'm a gamer, mm-hmm. and I'm adventurer games is like my topic that I like a lot. And I'm always playing with two minds. The one is the gamer, I'm enjoying the gameplay and everything. But the other one is always the wayfinding expert. And I'm always looking at, okay, how do they do their maps, how do they landmarks and this kind of stuff, and how does it help? And there's a couple of games that really redefined, is like, I always told myself I want to be somewhere where I don't know everything and get no support. That's why we went to Japan last year, by the way. That was one of the triggers to get lost, basically, within a system. And there is a game. I'm going to go back and I'll tell you the title when we meet in London. You have to play it, because all the things that we learn from image of the city and so on, what we use to do our mental landmarks, they come along and you have to use them because there's nothing else. And it's such a nice game. Oh. And there is a good sci-fi game. I have to look at the title. Again, something I will tell you when you see in London, because that's where they thought about this. And they did the cyborg restart, the recharging stations, the crossroads and everything. So there's some games out there that do a really nice job in depicting future thinking on that topic.
And it would be lovely to have a presentation about all of them, what the future looked like in the past. But there's, on that subject of gaming and spatial behavior, there was a game developed possibly as many as 10 years ago now. And I'm really annoyed with myself. I cannot remember what it was called, but it was developed specifically I mean, it's a game that you know that is rewarding to play, but it was designed to capture spatial behavior data.
Okay.
So it's to do with how people navigate this virtual environment, but it also, I think, in through the logging into the game, it collects data about where you are, your gender, your age, and things like that. And it's now the biggest body of behavioral data about spatial behavior in the world. It was a collaboration between
I know which game you mean. It was, I think, with a sailing boat. Because I tried to contact them once to do a podcast, but I never got the return. And when I tried the game again, I did it once and then again. I think it was already shut down.
Oh, has it actually been shut down now?
I couldn't enter it anymore because I researched it then. I really have to look at it again. It reminds me to maybe go for another try, because I found that quite interesting as well, just like you, to do that and to actually succeed with it and get the data that we can actually use. Mm-hmm. It's great.
I know they were I've been to several talks about the game and research using the data that they collected, and there are some really interesting insights that they found, which they, you know, are, it's incredibly robust data because it is now such a huge data set. Yes, so, spatial behavior in games. I mean, how representative that is of how people behave in the real world. There's obviously, you know, an imperfect relationship between how people behave in the real world and how they behave online.
Apart from anything else,
walking several miles online is a lot easier than walking several miles in the real world. So just that physical effort influences the decisions that people make.
I think there are aspects that are probably different because you don't have the same, you know, reward system, or how do you say, the other side of reward is like...
The disbenefits or whatever.
The disbenefits of doing something wrong. But at least, I mean, I'm a big fan of Kevin Lynch. I mean, if I have to write down names of people who influenced my work and my point of view, Kevin Lynch is like on top of them. Mm-hmm. And when I played this game that I'm going to look up the title, I thought, yeah, there's it again. This is like all... This is it. Like for me, it was like check.
Yeah.
On the theories regarding mental maps.
They'd read their Kevin Lynch before they built the game, had they?
Yeah, probably. I'm not sure. Maybe it's really just a thing that happens naturally. That's what we do. But that again, there could be a talk when we're talking about behavior and wayfinding would be very interesting. The most boring book, but nevertheless very interesting, was a book on all neuroscience regarding wayfinding. Don't know that book title now, but that was quite nice as well. And I wrote it when we wrote our own book about 19 years ago, so I had to fight through it.
Neuroscience is really tough reading in general.
Yeah. Especially for somebody who has not studied it. It can become very technical very fast.
My brother is a university researcher, and neurochemistry is the subject that he researches. And after about 30 seconds of him telling me what he does, the information just goes straight over my head. I have no idea what he's on about.
I think there was once a joke... I don't know if it was a comedian. He was just like talking. He was talking to somebody who was a rocket scientist. And then he was like mentioning, yeah, you couldn't even use, you know, the saying, this is not rocket science because this is rocket science. I like that one a lot. Let's going back. I mean, we're in the middle of it, which I think makes our disciplines so interesting. If you look at the details, you can talk about, and many of them you have covered well, I think, within the program. Thanks for giving us your insight. What happened during the selection process? Mm-hmm. I think that's quite interesting as well. Why do we select things that we want to have for a workshop? we're basically going straight across the 30 minutes line now. So I'm going to give people some information on where they can find information on the event. Basically, it's the website of the Sign Design Society. It's signdesignsociety.co.uk. I think you can get a direct link as well from the londondesignfestival.com website.
Yep,
because you're part of their program.
Yeah.
That is taking place just before and just after. So for those who want to extend their time and do a much more extended travel regarding design, I had a look on their website. So they have a couple of other things that are quite interesting to look at as well. So that might be an extra benefit for coming to London. The program itself definitely is. Is there anything you want to say to people who have nearly decided to to come to the event?
Book your ticket soon. If the demand is anything like it was for last year's symposium, it will be packed and it will be full of people who whose views are interesting, who work in the field of wayfinding design or allied fields. Lots of interesting people to meet, lots of interesting things to hear. It's a great opportunity to learn more and meet new interesting people. And it's also at the Building Centre, which is the centre for the building profession in the UK. And it will be the last day of their exhibition about sustainable materials in the built environment. So it's also worth coming just to see that exhibition. And we discovered when we went to the sign to the building centre that the staircase down to their conference centre is built entirely out of cork.
Really?
It had a metal structure.
The covering, the whole, nice.
The whole thing is made of cork. We were trying to figure out if it had a metal armature inside it, and I don't actually think it does. So,
okay.
Yes, that we'll be surrounded by sustainable materials to provoke even more thought.
That's good to know. I didn't know that. So it's news for me. Now I already know what I'm doing in the morning. For those, you mentioned it, who want to fly in, quick out kind of strategy, the half day will start, open doors, you've written, is 12:15. So it will start about 12:30, 12:45 until 18:45. And yes. Maybe as the final element for the decisions, there will be drinks afterwards, I think.
There will. There's a reception afterwards, which we have included in the ticket price. The ticket price, I think, is incredibly good value for what we're giving. So absolutely worthwhile. And the venue is in central London, really easy to get to as well. So there's no excuses about not being able to find it, I think. So
in that case, Andrew, I'd say, wait, before I'm saying goodbye, I have to say another thing. Basically, we're putting all this information, including the links to the Sign Design Society, plus the link to the festival, in the show notes. And if you have questions, you can send them to us as anytime, which is podcast@geraumt.com. And Andrew, now it's time. Thanks for talking to us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're very, very welcome. I'm looking forward to meeting you personally.
In a few weeks, indeed. See you there.